And welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT at 9.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Connor. How are you doing,
Phil? Good afternoon, Phil.
Do you notice that Terry's wearing a Target on his shirt?
That's
like looking for trouble. It's the colors of France. I don't know if that has anything to do with soccer, whatever. Today on the Taylor Report, we're going to be talking to Lisa Winter-Card. She is a counsel for a Rwandan refugee applicant who has been ordered to be deported, and I'm calling it the strange case. And following that, I know I'm going to be talking to Ann Garrison in KPFA Berkeley. And I think she's going to interview me, oddly enough. I mean, the two of us are going to talk about covering the subject of Rwanda. And we will be featuring Keith Bolander at 5:30. And Keith Bolander has written two terrific books about Cuba, the issue of terrorism and how to fight it, and who's doing it and who's not. And so that should be the most of the matter. And we are joined now by Lisa Winter-Card. How are you doing? Are you there?
Good. Thank you.
Well, thank you for talking to us. Last week on this show, we talked about the matter to do with your client, Jean Berkman Habinshuti. The case has not gotten a lot of publicity, although it strikes me it should. I noticed that Today's Star, I think, has a feature about it. Let me just identify why I was struck by the importance of this story. Mr. Habinshuti, everyone agrees, was the personal secretary of Agathe Uwilingiyimana, the prime minister, the sitting prime minister of Rwanda, when the events began on April the 6th, 1994, and the president of the country, was assassinated, and then Agathe Uwilingiyimana was assassinated, and she's known, her reputation is quite well known because of movies like Hotel Rwanda, where she's one of the featured aspects of the story, and then there is the book by General Romeo Dallaire, Shake Hands with the Devil, and there have been a lot of documentaries. She was always called a moderate and one of the first martyrs, one of the first people killed in the events, the war and the massacres. And now her secretary has applied to be a refugee in Canada, and he's been ordered, been refused, and ordered deported. I don't know if that's an accurate summary, but I want to know, can you tell us how the story unfolded for you?
I wasn't his lawyer from the very beginning. I was called in substantially after he was determined to be inadmissible to Canada. But what began initially was that initially his wife and one of his daughters were found to be convention refugees, and his wife submitted an application to sponsor him. This was back in 2005, and there was never any decision rendered on that application for permanent residence, although they did send him a letter asking him to set out his role, his duties. There was brought to his attention a concern that he may be inadmissible for being a senior official in the Rwandan government, and there's a section of the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, which is Section 35(1)(b), which says that a person is inadmissible to Canada for crimes against humanity if they were a senior official in a designated government. And Canada has designated the government, the entire government of Rwanda, from 1990 until the outbreak of the genocide, and then there's a period of time after during the genocide as well, which anyone that was a senior official of that government is inadmissible to Canada. And the consequences of that inadmissibility are not only that they can't immigrate to Canada, but that they are not eligible to make a refugee claim, and that even if they are given what's called a pre-removal risk assessment, they cannot be assessed on convention refugee grounds. So there's very, very serious consequences to being found inadmissible. So initially, he came to Canada in 2011, he was sitting in Rwanda for 17 years after the genocide, from 94, initially in hiding, and then
he went into hiding for fear of his life, right?
Absolutely.
in April of 1994.
The only reason he and his wife are alive today is because when the Interahamwe came to their door, their guard told them that they'd already been slaughtered. And so then they turned around and went away. Otherwise, he would be he would have been killed.
And the succeeding government that was set up in July 1994 never charged him.
They never charged him, and in fact, he was appointed as a member of parliament at a time when everybody was under investigation for collaboration for crimes against humanity, for genocide. He was always trusted by this regime as well as the previous government. His motives, his behavior was always without reproach. So now, all of a sudden, and I guess I'm skipping a little bit of ahead, but 20 years later, suddenly it shows up in a newspaper from a Kigali source that the prosecutor has now suddenly charged him with crimes against humanity, with genocide, with murder, extermination, when for 17 years while he was sitting in Rwanda, he was not charged.
It's just amazing. I find it, and I'm sure listeners who follow this, we on this program, we have spoken to the former Prime Minister, Faustin Tugiri Mungu. Actually, he was to be the Prime Minister. He's from the same party as Agathe Uwilingiyimana. We've talked to former high-ranking people in the in both governments, the Habyarimana government and the succeeding one. And I don't think it helps that the papers don't seem to quite get a bead on what the story is about. I noticed the first paragraph of a story today says, an alleged war criminal from Rwanda lost his last-ditch plea. But the last paragraph of the story, the judge is speaking, and he says, the minister does not allege that you committed, were involved, or were complicit in the tragic events that I shall collectively refer to as the Rwanda genocide. So they're not saying what, in the last paragraph, what they were talking about in the first. It seems to me people have not quite understood who Mr. Habinshuti is. Could you speak to the point about the claim that he is a senior official? I mean, we have to have that. It has to be a senior official. Could you just explain how they came to the conclusion that a secretary
is a senior official? So the section 35(1)(b) is informed by the regulations, and they say that a senior official should be somebody who has the power to exert significant influence on government power. And so basically there's thousands and thousands of pages of research and books and articles that have been written about about the Rwandan government. But they found one page in one book written by a gentleman, a professor by the name of
Gishawa?
Mr. Professor Gishawa. In fact, he's written a letter in support of Mr. Habinshuti, which I'm in the process of translating from French into English.
Oh, really? Now, that's
yes.
So he actually has written to explain what he thinks his role was in a supportive way.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so the one line in the one, or the one page in the one book, states that this there was a meeting, a significant meeting that sort of played a role, which was this meeting of April 1st. They actually misquoted as saying April 2nd. It was April 2nd that it was reported in the radio, but it was the meeting was on April 1st at her home. And in Professor Gishawa's book, he states, now of course this was taken from second-hand accounts 6 years after the fact by unnamed sources, that Mr. Habinshuti was one of two people that had the idea for the Prime Minister to have this meeting. And so that was
But that doesn't make you a senior official, does it? If I'm I was once a corporal, if I'm standing in the ranks and a lieutenant asks me, what do you think about the situation? I might give him my opinion, but that doesn't make me a lieutenant.
Well, the Immigration Appeal Division found that that was very significant. Also, there was one line in his resume which said that one of his duties was to advise the Prime Minister upon request. So this was also taken as being very, very significant, although he stated that she really never asked him for any advice. But it was in his resume. And the standard of proof for the government is very, very low in order to support a finding of inadmissibility. They only have to prove that there are reasonable grounds to believe, something more than mere suspicion. So these two factors, this idea that he had the idea for this meeting, and that he, in his resume, said that he advised the Prime Minister on a request were taken as sufficient evidence that he was a senior official in the Rwandan government.
Yeah. By the way, on the matter of government, I don't see why that isn't reviewed. The government was a coalition of parties at that time, and there were at least five parties, and they distributed the positions and ministries according to party. And it was pretty much a dead government because everybody was waiting for the Arusha business to be applied.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that Agathe Uwilingiyimana, as a matter of fact, would have been leaving office to be replaced by Faustin Twegiri Mungu. So, General De Lair and everybody agrees that she was a what they call a moderate. And I don't use any of these terms as I don't know, but it's quite strange.
Absolutely. Even within, if you look at the Rwandan government's own website, they talk about her as a martyr, as a person who was fighting for peace, as a person who was murdered because she opposed the genocide ideology. She's a hero in every account, mm-hmm. and he was helping her. So the designation of the entire Rwandan government as a government that committed crimes against humanity is very, very problematic. Because mm-hmm. it paints everybody with the same brush. The good guys and the bad guys, the extremists who were fomenting hatred mm-hmm. and inciting acts of violence, together with those people who were fighting against them.
Yes.
And they're all being painted with the same brush, and Mr. Habinshuti is unfortunately a victim twice over of this, first of the genocide, and mm-hmm. then second of the Canadian government's inability to distinguish between these two different groups of people.
Mm-hmm. And now you're, when I was following this, I had the impression that he might have been removed as of last Thursday. He's presently being held here, I understand. Are you going to have any opportunity to present, for example, the exculpatory letter of Mr. Gishoa?
Yes, I am. We are entitled to submit a new pre-removal risk assessment. It doesn't come with it a statutory stay of removal, so he is really here only because they are unable to remove him to Rwanda right now. Mm-hmm. So I am able to file a new pre-removal risk assessment, which I'm in the process of gathering the evidence. I have Mr. Gishawa's letter. I have that article from the Chinese paper quoting the Kigali source mm-hmm. as saying that he's now suddenly charged with crimes against humanity, which is really a politically motivated charge. There's no basis in reality for this, but we know that currently the Kagame regime is becoming increasingly strident in quashing opposition and in fact killing their opponents.
Yes. We spoke on this program to the daughter of Colonel Karageya, who was murdered recently in South Africa. And, we've had judgments. The British government has warned various Rwandans living abroad that they had to have special security for them. And in Sweden, agents of the Rwandan government were arrested and are presently doing time. So you would think this is highly dangerous for Mr. Habinshuti, because once you're in the papers and being talked about in this way, particularly labels being attached, undoubtedly his life becomes more at risk.
Yeah, yes. The previous officer who refused his application for the first pre-removal risk assessment found that he was not a target, that he was not a person of interest to Kagame. But obviously this new evidence that arose after the fact certainly sheds doubt on that proposition.
Well, certainly seems to me if they're going to resurrect old controversies, then it becomes a political argument, because there are interested parties that have to make their own definition of what they thought was happening. But clearly he's not a senior official. Just last question. When I heard that he was going to be removed, it sounded like some sort of direct operation. How would they transport him? Were they intending to fly him directly from Canada to Rwanda? Is that how it works?
Yes. I mean, it was a stopover flight. I think it was through Ethiopia. But yes, they would have removed him directly to Rwanda.
My goodness. Well, I hope we can speak to you again. This is Lisa Winter-Card, and she's counsel for Jean Berkman. having Shruti, and what a Herculean job it is. I hope we can speak to you again, and I wish you luck and luck
Thank
for your
you
flying.
Thank you so much. I'd be more than happy to keep you updated as to how it goes.
Yes. Thank you. It's a big story. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Lisa Wintercard. She's counsel for Jean Berkman Habinshuti. Today's Toronto Star has an article. It comes under the general label of immigration. You can find it on the at the Star site. But again, I have to say, one of the problems that people get into here is that when they are reported, the journalists often pick these things up rather late. And so they just kind of cobble it together, which is not helpful for the poor individual who's facing all the questions. Of course, our listeners will know we've been following this very closely.